Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll look into a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with an analysis of whether the benefits of the Affordable Care Act will emerge in time to overcome the growing concerns about the healthcare.gov website that is feeding into the perception shaped by decades of conservative propaganda that the government is the problem and private enterprise is the solution. Jonathan Oberlander, a professor of social medicine and health policy and management at the University of North Carolina, joins us to discuss the birth pangs of Obamacare. Then we'll examine the role of private contractors in the train wreck of website woes that are stymieing the launch of the new healthcare insurance exchanges. Scott Amey, the general counsel at the Project on Government Oversight, who investigates federal spending on goods and services, joins us to look into the contractors responsible, Serco, Equifax, and CGI, who have already spent over three times the amount of their original bid, and whether the tech surge Obama has promised will overcome the already negative perceptions of healthcare reform. Then finally, we will look into the Benghazi hoax, the title of a new book by Ari Rabinhaft, the Vice President of Research and Communications at Media Matters for America, who has meticulously chronicled the right-wing lies behind the politicization of an American tragedy on September the 11th, 2012, in Benghazi, Libya. We will discuss the wholesale manufacturing of a phony political scandal by a failing Republican candidate for president, an unscrupulous congressman who is a serial grandstander, and Fox News. And joining us now is Jonathan Oberlander, who's a professor of social medicine and health policy and management at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, where he is also a professor in the Department of Political Science. A leading authority on the politics of healthcare and healthcare reform, he's the author of The Political Life of Medicare and co-editor of the three-volume series, The Social Medicine Reader, second edition. He is currently working on a book project on the politics of health reform. Welcome to Background Briefing, Jonathan Oberlander.
Thanks for having me.
And I should think in the last few days, you're getting a lot of grist for the mill in terms of your new book. And the politics of healthcare and health reform have been so tortured with the government being shut down in an attempt to kill Obamacare and even threatening to tank the economy. And just as we recover from that gun to the head, now the website that's launching the Affordable Care Act is having its problems. So what's your sense of this continuing political agony? Is it all going to end up okay?
I don't think we know where it's going to end up. Health reform is never short of drama, that's for certain, and there's plenty of drama to go around. I think the fight over the debt ceiling and the government shutdown and the efforts by Senator Cruz and others to defund Obamacare underscores the extent to which the healthcare fight is not over. You would have thought it would be over by now, but it's not, far from it, and is still very much an issue that is the source of great partisan division. The situation with the website is not good. The rollout for the health insurance exchanges, especially the federal exchange, has not been what the administration wanted. It's a great disappointment, and it's a real problem. If they can get a hold of it sometime soon, that won't matter very much. But if this persists, it really is going to be an issue going into the next year.
So is there any evidence at this point, Jonathan Oberlander, of the extent to which these problems with the rollout of the Affordable Care Act via healthcare.gov, which is obviously problematic, is there any evidence of how much it's affecting the enrollment in these new exchanges, which is really key to the whole effort?
So we don't know, and that's a problem. The enrollment data that we're getting is sporadic, and we do have some data from states, and there are some states where this is rolling out in a more successful way, including places like Kentucky and Washington State. But in terms of the federal government, which is operating the exchange in about three dozen states, they have not released official data. They've told us how many people have started applications, but that's different than actually enrolling in a program. We have anecdotal evidence from insurance companies and other sources saying that the enrollment numbers so far are quite modest and in some cases very, very low indeed, but we really don't have a hard and fast number yet.
And do you think that any heads are going to roll? Is there, I imagine there are calls, of course, for Secretary of Health and Human Services, Kathleen Sebelius, to be fired from Republicans. Obviously, that's somewhat predictable, but I take it that if the president were to do something like that, he'd be acknowledging that there's a problem here and that needs to be, you know, addressed by somebody being sacrificed. So what's your political read on the recriminations?
I don't know how many heads are going to roll at the end of this, but there is no question that somebody needs to be held accountable. This should not have happened. There is no excuse. Yes, they're operating in an environment where there's great political division over the Affordable Care Act, where it's difficult to get support administratively, where they ended up running exchanges in many more states than they thought they would, where they can't get the kind of funding they would like to have and the administrative resources they would like to have. And this is a complex task. All of that is true. At the same time, there is no excuse to roll this out in the condition that it was rolled out in. And if I contrast this with Medicare's rollout back in 1966, where it was, yes, a much more accommodating political environment, but on the other hand, they were very worried about demonstrating that the government could run a health insurance program given American ambivalence about the government's role in medical care. And they did everything in their power to make sure that Medicare had a smooth takeoff. And this has been anything but smooth. They still have time to recover, but it really is a situation that should not have happened. And I do think somebody should be held accountable.
Again, I'm speaking with Jonathan Oberlander, who's a professor of social medicine and health policy and management at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, where he's also a professor in the Department of Political Science. A leading authority on the politics of healthcare and healthcare reform, he is the author of The Political Life of Medicare and co-editor of the three-volume series, The Social Medicine Reader, second edition. He is currently working on a book project on the politics of health reform. So is there, though, any chance that this whole effort of healthcare reform is going to get our hands around the big problem, which is the out-of-control medical costs in this country, which are taking up to as high as 18% of GDP compared to, say, 7 or 8% that other advanced democracies spend on healthcare. That was always, in many ways, the rationale for why we needed to have reform in the first place, was because it was such a budget buster. Is there any evidence that these spiraling costs will start to come down?
The United States has many problems in healthcare policy and many big problems. And I think the central rationale for the Affordable Care Act was expanding health insurance coverage. That really was the core rationale behind the law. On the other hand, it's certainly the case that the United States has the most expensive system in the world, and another rationale for the law was to try and do something about healthcare spending. The irony is the rate of growth in healthcare spending in the United States has actually slowed down the last few years, and that is something that I think has not gotten a lot of public notice, but it has slowed down, and significantly so. We don't really know fully why that is. A lot of it, maybe most of it, has to do with the economy, but not all of it. And it's not clear how much of it has anything to do with the Affordable Care Act. This trend, this slowdown, started before the Affordable Care Act was enacted. So I suppose if you believe in time travel, the Affordable Care Act would have been enacted in 2010 and gone back in time to slow down healthcare spending. But short of that, it's hard to make sense of it, and it may be that some of the things that the law is doing are having an effect. Certainly, the law is going to slow down the rate of growth in the Medicare program. I don't think there's any question about that, and it's already starting to do that. The bigger question is what it will do outside of Medicare, and I don't think we know the answer to that.
So, in general, I spoke with a physician yesterday, and he made the point that the focus should be on having choice for providers as opposed to choice for insurers. Is that just inherently the way this Affordable Care Act has gone? In other words, it's really an insurance-based program as opposed to a, you know, certainly not a single payer. So is that a valid criticism?
Well, I think in the United States, we often assume in health policy that the choice that people care about and only about is choice of insurance plan. And in fact, I think a great number of people care much more about their choice of doctor. They want to see the doctor they want to, and they may not even be sure what kind of insurance plan they're in. And so we do tend to prioritize choice of insurer over choice of physician, and it doesn't have to be that way. But certainly the Affordable Care Act's approach is to think about choice of insurance plan for those who are on the exchanges. Most of us, of course, are not going to be affected by the exchanges one way or another. And some of those exchange plans are going to have very restrictive provider networks, particularly the very low-cost plans. And the higher-cost plans will have broader networks where people can choose providers. So I do think it's a debate worth having and a discussion that we need to talk about. What matters to people and what should matter, choice of insurer or choice of physician?
But it seems that in the political domain, in terms of the way this argument is shaping up and the way that the Republicans are getting traction on it, because I think there are a lot of people that believe that in effect what Obama's doing is putting a bunch of freeloaders on their dime. In other words, the people who oppose it are people who think that it's going to cost them, their insurance is going to go up in order for a bunch of people that they consider unworthy to be insured. And do you think that that is, you know, being effectively challenged, that idea that Obamacare is a free lunch for freeloaders at the expense of hardworking, red-blooded Americans?
Well, I think the answer to that is, first of all, most of the uninsured are working Americans. Most of the vast majority of them are in families where they're working. It's simply that they're working for a business that's very small and can't afford to provide coverage, or they're working in an occupation that has a very high uninsured rate, for example, construction, where the risks are great. So most of the uninsured are not freeloaders. They're working Americans who don't have access to affordable coverage. And I think we have not done a good enough job of explaining to Americans who the uninsured are. So that's the first point. The second point, which I think is really important to say, is that in most cases, this is not going to be a free lunch. Yes, people are going to be subsidized who are very, very low income, but all of us who get employer-sponsored insurance are subsidized as well at a very great expense through the tax system. Many of the folks who are buying coverage through the exchanges are going to have to pay a significant amount out of pocket, particularly for deductibles that are much, much higher than most insured Americans have. So in most cases, this is not going to be a free lunch, and in many cases, it's going to be a significant financial strain for many Americans to afford that coverage, even with the law. The third thing that I think is really important, and I do think the administration has not been able to effectively make this case, is the Affordable Care Act is not just about the uninsured. It is about the insured as well. It's about making coverage more affordable and more accessible for those who don't have it and more secure for those who do. And so if you have coverage right now, in many cases, you're going to get a lot of new protections where they're not going to be able to take your insurance away because you have a pre-existing condition, not going to be able to turn you away from individual insurance if you were to lose your job and had to go that route. You're going to get new benefits if you're on Medicare, new preventive benefits, new prescription drug benefits. If you're in the private market, again, you're going to get new preventive benefits. There's going to be a cap on how much you can spend in a year and in a lifetime to make sure we protect people from medical bankruptcy. So there are a lot of benefits in this law for people who already have insurance. And the reality is, and in most cases, according to the Congressional Budget Office, insurance premiums are not going to go up very much at all for most Americans who have health insurance coverage. And in many cases, those premiums may come down a bit. So I think there's a lot of misinformation out there. And one of the great failures of the health reform campaign in 2009 and 2010 was to explain the benefits of health care reform to the insured.
But isn't the whole idea to bring the cost down? I mean, isn't that how it's going to be judged? That, and obviously in this political year coming up in 2014, I'm sure it will be an issue. Obviously, if the Republicans hadn't behaved in such an insane and suicidal way recently, they would have had a stronger case against so-called Obamacare. And now they've handed the Democrats an election issue, which is how can you vote for these irresponsible people who shut down the government and threatened to tank the economy? But that aside, do you think that there is some traction here in basically, if it doesn't cost you less and the results aren't evident, won't this basically take the wind out of this thing?
Well, I think that's part of it, but that's not all of it, because remember, there are about 3 million Americans under the age of 26 who have gained coverage because of the Affordable Care Act provision that families could put them on their coverage. So it's not just about what happens to premiums. It is, in a sense, always difficult to measure premiums, because if the Affordable Care Act keeps premiums from going up as much, that is harder for people to sort of get a hold of than if the premium directly goes down. And again, in the short term, the impact on premiums is going to be fairly modest one way or another. So I think the case the administration has to make is, yes, on cost grounds, and there are also many Americans who have already gotten rebates from their insurance companies because of the provisions in the law, but they also have to make the case that this makes insurance coverage more secure.
So do you think that Koch brothers are going to have any traction then with their campaign through this front group called Generation Opportunity, where they're actually encouraging young, healthy people not to sign up in these health exchanges? And obviously the president recently made a joke about it by suggesting that if you get sick, don't turn to the Koch brothers. He never named them specifically, but I mean, it's a bit hard to swallow that these zillionaires are out there telling people they shouldn't get health care. But
it's a dangerous message, because on the one hand, it seems rational, but the point of insurance is uncertainty. It's to protect us against that unpredictable risk. And you can be as the healthiest 25-year-old in the world, but you just don't know what tomorrow is going to bring. And at a actually quite reasonable cost in the exchanges, because they have special policies for younger Americans, you can get that protection. You can get that security. I don't know how much impact that campaign is going to have. I think actually the ineffectiveness of the website is a much greater threat to that cohort if they don't get it up and running better soon.
So at the end of the day, then, what you're telling us is there are an awful lot of, you've talked about aspects of the Affordable Care Act that simply I don't know about, and I'm, you know, trying to be relatively informed here. It sounds like there's an awful lot of good stuff that we don't know about, and whose fault is that?
Part of it has to do with the complexity of the law. This is not a program like Medicare. It's not a program. It's a series of policies and regulations and subsidies and rules that treat different groups of Americans in different ways at different times. And it is difficult, very difficult, to develop a coherent narrative and explanation of the law out of that. The Affordable Care Act is an effort to patch the holes in the American patchwork system. So part of it has to do with the complexity of the law. Part of it has to do with some of the struggles the administration has had in explaining the law, again, particularly the benefits to insured Americans. And part of it has to do with misinformation and propaganda. One way of understanding the law's troubles is that many Americans don't understand that there are provisions in the law that are actually quite popular and they like a law, and they don't understand they're in the law. And they believe there are things in the law, such as death panels, that are mythical. That's not a good combination politically.
Well, Jonathan Oberlander, I thank you so much for joining us here today.
Thanks so much.
Again, I've been speaking with Jonathan Oberlander, who's a professor of social medicine and health policy and management at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, where he's also a professor in the Department of Political Science, a leading authority on the politics of healthcare and healthcare reform. He's the author of The Political Life of Medicare and co-editor of the three-volume series, The Social Medicine Reader, Second Edition. He is currently working on a book project on the politics of health reform. We're going to take a brief station break and we'll be back looking into the role of private contractors in the train wreck of the website healthcare.gov.